Hello, this is Scott Wells for the MagicWordPodcast.com. While I was in Los Angeles, California, working at the Magic Castle, I reconnected with one of my Phi Sigma Kappa fraternity brothers from Southern Illinois University, Mr. Tom Blomquist. I caught up with him for some coffee one afternoon at Cantor's Restaurant in La Brea, where, by coincidence, they were filming behind us for a reality TV series. Unfortunately, that meant that it has a lot of background noise that was louder than I would have liked. However, the subject matter and the stories I captured are gold, and I don't want you to miss anything by hearing or learning from this great guy. Tom worked in production jobs for the early Hallmark Hall of Fame television show in the early 1970s. Then the writing happened. He was a staff writer and story editor for several TV shows like The A-Team, Greatest American Hero, Hunter, Hardcastle, McCormick, and others. He later worked on Swamp Thing and became a showrunner. He then produced and directed Walker, Texas Ranger, and was instrumental in helping get increased ratings for the show during his 2 years working with Chuck Norris. He also talks about the duties and differences among all the jobs behind the scenes, what it's like to work in Hollywood, and how he made the transition from the daily grind to where he is now. Perhaps the most important thing he discusses is how to be successful in Hollywood, or anywhere for that matter, and that is to persevere, have a thick skin, and not be afraid of rejection. This is a fascinating discussion, which is not so much directly and completely about magic, but is about the magic of success. So please grab a cup of coffee and eavesdrop on our conversation as you sit at a nearby booth, screen out the background noise, and listen to our chat at Cantor's here on The Magic Word. Scott Wells for the Magic Word Podcast, and I'm in Cantor's Deli here in Los Angeles. Actually, is this La Brea, I guess, is what it's called? Okay. And this is a world-famous place and a great deli, and, you know, of course, Hollywood is known for its actors, directors, and producers. I'm here with a college fraternity brother of mine who is a producer and instructor, also a teacher. We're going to talk a little bit about that. Mr. Tom Blomquist. Hi there, Tom.
Hello. How are you, Scott?
Doing great, thank you. And it's a pleasure to kind of reconnect after all these years then as well. We were just kind of catching up a little bit before I started to record, but I thought it was going to be interesting that some of the listeners might like to know a little bit about Hollywood. You know, I just yesterday was talking with a fella, Jonathan Levitt, who was in Now You See It, or Now You See Me, and also Burt Wonderstone. He was a consultant and everything for that. So we're talking a little bit about the movie. So it seems to make sense kind of talking with somebody who is a producer, who's kind of been there and done that from the other side, because I know that people would like to kind of have an idea. But just by way of giving some credentials or credit of what you have done with Walker, Texas Ranger, and A-Team and everything, just tell me a little bit about your CV, your resume.
Other than being a male exotic dancer?
Yes, that's right. Yeah. A male model.
Yeah, I don't get much call for that anymore. I worked on the Hallmark Hall of Fame series originally.
That's when you got out of college. That was one of your first gigs.
Yeah, right out of college. I was recruited by Quitcona Building Advertising, and I got a chance to go to England and Italy to work on those some of the wonderful Hallmark movies. And then I realized I wanted to be a writer. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be the guy writing those. So I quit my job, much to the chagrin of my family, who thought I was insane. And they were right. And then I moved to Los Angeles to be a writer. Mm-hmm. That took a long time. That took 10 years for the writing to happen at a professional level. But in the meantime, I did things that, or whatever I could to be in the business and learn. So I produced the talk show, Tom Snyder's Tomorrow Show, at NBC for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. Met all the famous people of the day.
Right.
At one night a week, you know, so we met everybody.
Is that the midnight show?
One a.m. On the East Coast. Midnight for you in the Midwest. And and I worked on, you know, production jobs, you know, as whatever, you know, a production coordinator or something on different things. And then the writing happened, and I went to work for Steve Cannell Productions, who was the hot independent company. He created the A-Team and Hardcastle McCormick and Hunter and all these shows, Greatest American Hero. And I went on there as a staff writer and story editor, and then moved up to producer pretty quickly. So I wrote for all the shows that he had on the air, whether I was producing them or not. We all kind of cross-pollinated. You know, the producers of one show would come in on the weekend and write a script for the other guy down the hall. And it was really cool. And
well, you were on the lot too, weren't you?
Well, he had his own building in Hollywood, so we weren't on a studio lot, but I worked on all those shows that were the hit shows of that era at Cannell, and I learned a lot about writing and editing and things, producing from him. Wonderful guy. And when I left that company to go out on my own, I worked for Universal. I did a show called Swamp Thing in Orlando, Florida, and freelanced around until I moved up to what they call a showrunner. That's the executive producer, head writer, basically.
I always wonder what a showrunner is. You know, I've seen that Stephen Moffat, you know, for the Doctor Who, is the showrunner, and I thought, what's a showrunner?
Well, okay. Somebody has to be in charge, and you have many layers of producers who have many responsibilities. But in television, because it's an insatiable beast, script-wise, every 7 or 8 or 9 days, however long you take to shoot an episode, you have to have a new script ready to go. It takes a lot longer to think of a script, develop the structure of the story, to go through the many drafts of the script to get it right than it does to shoot them.
You may
spend a couple of months getting it ready and it's gone in a week. So somebody, and then those go into editing, and someone is answerable to the network or the funders, and it's always the writer. The head writer is the only quality control person, I guess you could say, that everything has to be approved by one person to meet one voice that is in everybody's head.
Right, right.
And it has to be a writer because of the script.
The one where the buck stops.
Yeah. And so working up to that level is a big deal. And I did get to do that at Universal on the Swamp Thing show. And then I did it at several others, eventually led up to the Walker Texas Ranger job. They had replaced the showrunner for reasons that are unimportant here, but just the chemistry was not quite right between all the people that were on the show. Good guy, friend of mine, actually. And they said, would you come take the show? And we think you'd be a good fit. And I had done a bunch of these kind of action-adventure cop shows for CBS before. And so I did that show for a couple of years. And that was very successful for me and for them.
It was on the Sci-Fi Channel, wasn't it?
Or no, it was on
Swamp
CBS.
CBS?
Swamp Thing was on USA Network.
USA, yeah.
Walker was on CBS.
Yeah, with Chuck Norris.
And but that went really well. Chuck and I worked really well together, and the show went from number 40 in the ratings to number 10 in the ratings. In the time I was there, and that it was kind of like watering a sick plant and watching it blossom.
Yeah, wow.
And it was really fun, and it was being the head writer, you know, really. That was bringing in other writers that I liked and admired to write scripts, working with them, guiding the story sensibility of the show, and
as an aside, can I want to inject just a quick little story then as well? So the story is that it's kind of funny with Chuck Norris that I was at actually a David Copperfield show in Dallas, and I was with my son, and my son Sean, who I named after Sean Connery, by the way, because you might remember I was a big James Bond fan.
Absolutely.
So,
I remember.
Anyhow.
I'm surprised you're not a secret agent, that you are, in fact, a magician.
I can't talk about that.
Ah.
So we were up in the balcony. And
that explains the luger in your shirt.
I'm just glad to see you. Like a little girl. So anyhow, that I saw Chuck Norris come in with some security, and he was had a good seat, you know, near down front. And during the intermission, that I went down to talk to him. And my son didn't know that. He thought I just went to get a soda or to go to the bathroom or something. And next thing, he's looking down there, and he sees his dad standing there talking to Chuck Norris. And so I was saying, all I wanted to say was, hey, are you still filming? Is Tom in town? And he kind of looked at me, and I said, Tom Bloomquist. And he said, no, he's back in L.A. And I said, well, be sure and tell him hello. And I gave him my card. You know, he probably lost or never said anything back to you. But my son said, well, you're really talking to him down there.
That's funny. Well, yeah, he's a good guy.
Yeah.
And I had a really good relationship with him. You know, it was my, as a showrunner, the task is, you know, part of it is creative, getting the scripts organized and editing and hiring the directors. And the other part is management, overseeing the budget and the production elements, but also managing the people.
When you were hiring the director,
including the star of the show, you know.
Yes, right.
He's a formidable guy, and even though he's a, you know, the Muhammad Ali of his sport, and two-time Super Bowl champion, and all kinds of things like that, he's also a movie star of 20 years experience, and has all the same concerns and interests and needs of any actor, and which is, you know, you guys aren't going to make me look foolish in this, are you? You know, that kind of thing. And so it was, it's always the task to work closely with the star to find their comfort zone.
Right.
Make sure that you are...
That you work well with them.
Yeah, and that the material...
You trust each other.
Exactly, because he has to know that the material they're doing this week is meeting the expectations of not only all of us, but the network and the audience. You know, his fans.
That's true.
And that's what... So watching the ratings went up noticeably during that period. They went from number 40 to number 10.
Thank you.
Number 40 to number 10 in the Nielsen ratings, which is basically one Nielsen position per week. And that's remarkable. And it was all done by creative strategy in the writing room, addressing needs of the audience to try to find an expanding audience. So if you look at the demographics and the ratings, you see that women were not watching the show. Well, what do we do to attract the women? You know, well, let's work on the love interest with his co-star, played by Shereen Wilson, we need more men watching. Well, let's accentuate the bigger acting sequences and make them more movie-like in their concept. And when we started addressing those things, the audience went up like every week. More and more people, clearly they were talking about the water cooler on Monday, and they were all giving it another sample, and we wound up a top 10 show, which is really, really wonderful.
And how many years did that run, Walker?
Walker ran about 9 years. I was there for two.
Just the last two or middle?
I came in the middle of the second season, stayed there for a couple of years. But as you and I were talking before you recorded this, the toll of being out of town gets to you. My family was back in Los Angeles, and I was spending more and more time in Dallas. And after a couple of years of that, I just, you know, you eventually you have to decide what you're going to be when you grow up, you know, and I wanted to be a dad.
Yeah.
And I missed my daughter's entire seventh grade experience because I was
That's
got to
be a sad thing.
It was horrible. And, you know, the first boy-girl parties and all that stuff that's exciting when you're a kid at that age. And so I decided to leave and just be home for a while and be a freelance writer at home. I wrote for friends on other shows and wrote a couple of pilots and I wrote a novel, just things that I wanted to do.
Well, I remember in school you used to do a lot of writing and everything like that too, and I would think that writing for a series, you got to come up with something every week, or do you plan this in advance? I mean, and so then for the 13-week series?
Well, some shows plan the whole season. The shows that have a continuing storyline.
Yeah.
Shows like Walker, where the episodes are standalone, you know, like Law and Order or CSI, all those shows, they're standalone episodes. You can run them pretty much in any order. Then those are different. Then you have an idea of maybe what you'd like to do this season, but each week you're having meetings with the writers and hearing from the network and talking to the stars about where the show should go, what kind of stories you should be doing. And then you're developing those. And not every story will work out. You know, you wind up not activating a couple of those to script level because you work on the story for a while and it doesn't really go anywhere. It's, you know, fruitful. Or you'll shelve it. But that's the test. It's all about telling stories.
Right.
You know, what kind of problem...
How do you come up with your storyline? I mean... How are you creative? You know, because magicians are creative. How do you, as a writer, become creative?
It's a couple of things. First of all, you read the newspapers and you watch the news and you're hearing things that are going on in the world, and certain things will grab your interest right away.
So it's topical.
Yeah.
Kind of like a comedian, topical humor, whatever, in the news.
Yeah, or crime, you know, you think, well, that's going to be a movie someday. And you go, wait a minute.
Yeah.
I could do that on the show.
Yeah.
But the truth is, once you're producing a show, you're writing a show, those characters become real to you, and you literally have dreams about those characters. You're living them 24/7. So at a certain point, not to sound too esoteric, but they talk to you and they kind of tell you
where they're going,
what they need.
I talked to the author, speaking of James Bond. I was talking with a fellow who was Ian Fleming's successor as a writer, and he was telling me that he's pretty much he's long since died, dead, but he had told me that he was a mentalist and a magician. I got to know him. Another long story, but he was saying that yes, it's like he lived the character of James Bond in his mind, and that everything between him and Ian Fleming that could be written about him is done. In other words, that all the readers would know how he would react given any circumstance. If he's put into a pit of alligators, he's going to get out by doing this, this, and this. And so, you know, you have already created a character. There's so many different things that a person can do. You do live that way.
Yeah, absolutely. I worked on a series, a really wonderful, high-quality series called Christie. It was based on Catherine Marshall's novel.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful novel. It's been a bestseller twice. And Catherine wrote it about her mother, who in 1910 became a Christian missionary in the Smoky Mountains as an 18-year-old girl. And based the novel on all of this historical research and all these actual people. And it's the kind of book that mothers hand down to their daughters, because it's a coming-of-age saga for women, but it's also a riveting historical account of life in the Appalachian Mountains, in the Smokies, at that time, turn of the century. And so it's a wonderful novel, and I had the chance to work on that series also for CBS. And so you're writing about Christian missionaries in 1910 or 12.
Yeah.
Completely different kind of show. You're not reading newspapers looking for crime ideas. You're writing about matters of the heart and survival and matters of the spirit. And is there a God or isn't there?
That kind of goes back to those your early roots when you were doing the things with the Hallmark.
Yeah,
kind of.
Yeah,
thing.
Sure. Very, very high quality, beautiful, great cast. Tyne Daly, the most decorated actress in our culture, with Emmys and Tony Awards. LeVar Burton, Tess Harper, who's an Oscar nominee. Fabulous people.
Yeah.
And so I did that for a couple of years. Again, I was on location in the Smoky Mountains much of that time. But it was a wonderful creative experience, because you're really writing about something that matters to a lot of people.
Yeah.
And the book has sold probably 20 million copies in a dozen languages.
Wow.
And so a lot of people are faithfully connected to this material. And you don't want to screw it up. You know,
right.
You don't want to disappoint them. But yet changes, you do so much of the novel itself, then you're going to invent new material, new storylines, new events based on history. So it's a completely different kind of writing challenge. But again, those characters are real. I mean,
sure.
you feel their pain, you feel their struggles, you feel their...
And you need to be true to them when you're writing.
Yeah. And then I was able to go back, but after that show was canceled, 5 years later, a different network, the PAX network, and Hallmark did a joint venture to bring the Christie back as a miniseries and to finish the story that had not been wrapped up in the original series. There were that many fans. And we did a 6-hour miniseries about the characters and wrapped up their storylines in that. And again, that was a privilege to be the showrunner on that. I was not the showrunner on the original series. I was the supervising producer working for the showrunner who actually created the series.
Yeah.
But then I was promoted, so to speak, on the miniseries. And and it was really wonderful to hang out with those characters again in my head,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
For a year and a half, developing the scripts and shooting, in this case, we were up in Vancouver
right.
shooting. And so that's my saga, and then I turned into a college teacher.
Well, I was going to ask you, what I think people would like to know who are listening, as a magician, trying to get that 15 minutes of fame or longer, of saying, how do I get in the movies? You know, I was talking to, again, Jonathan Levitt here yesterday, and, you know, working with a couple of movies, and it was interesting how that he had moved out here and said he had a six-month timeline saying, I'm going to do something. You know, if I'm a walk-on or something, I'm going to get to be, you know, in something. So, but I'm sure that people come here with dreams and they go home with broken dreams every day, the majority probably.
Or they stay here with broken dreams.
Hmm.
But, you know, I'll bet you half the people working in this restaurant and or sitting in these booths are
yeah.
either in the industry or aspiring to be in the industry.
Yeah.
Or were in the industry once and left it for some reason.
Yeah.
But you're right.
Well, we got this reality TV series
yeah.
that's filming right behind us.
20 feet behind us,
yeah.
there's some reality show shooting. The answer that, the response that I have for you about that is, yes, a lot of people come here with dreams. Not just to be actors, but to be a writer
yeah.
or to
what
be a director.
What do they do? How do they go about it? Who do they talk to? Yeah. What do they do?
Well, my
what do you tell your students?
Well, I tell my students over and over again the simple truth, which is if this were easy, everybody would be doing it.
Yeah, yeah.
You
isn't
know?
That the truth
if you think
of anything?
About it, if, but it's really true with showbiz. You know, if it were easy to be an actor, a working actor, a movie star, or a successful writer, or a successful director, making hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars a year, well, everybody would be doing it.
Sure.
But the fact is, it's not easy. It's not easy at a craft level, and it's not easy on a political level. It's a marathon race. It's not a sprint. So you don't come out here for 6 months and I'm going to give it a try.
Yeah.
That's a sprint.
Run. Yeah.
You got to look at this as a life choice.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I'm going to be healthy now and I'm going to run every morning and I'm going to eat yogurt 3 times a day and all of that and I'm not going to eat any gluten or, you know, and I'm going to take my vitamins. That's a lifestyle.
Right.
You make a choice, a commitment to that. And then you do it every day, whether you feel like it or not, for however long it takes to reach your goal. And it's almost certainly not 3 months or 6 months. So that's a general note, but it's very true.
But going to try and find a contact, an agent, or, you know, or if you want to be an actor, you know, getting headshots or whatever else that you have to do, I guess you just go with casting calls or...
Yes, there are mechanisms
yeah.
for each of these jobs. If the people listening to this are interested in being performers, then you first have to master the performance art. You have to learn how to act. You have to develop... a sense of truth, you know, in being able to portray characters.
Right.
Trying
to get to know somebody. I mean, like, for an example, Christopher Hart, that was just his hand, you know, was the thing for the Addams Family. Or, again, Jonathan Levy was talking about that in Burt Wonderstone, that it was his hands that you see a lot. And
yep.
so it may not be on camera with your face, but you may be a hand actor, you know.
Of course. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult to put into any kind of concise statement, except to say that the business is not generally fair. In that the most
isn't that life,
life is totally not fair. But this business, because it's a magnifying glass of life, because the money is so, and the
yeah.
fame and the other attributes are so distorted
yeah.
that. It's accentuated in many ways, but the truth is the most talented actor, the most talented writer, or the best looking girl, or the whatever, are not necessarily going to get their dream come true.
That's where the politics comes in.
There's politics and luck, and
right time.
Yeah, and I tell my students that while it's not fair, it does tend to be reciprocal.
in that if you hang in there and you're in for the long haul and you continue, and this could be decades, by the way.
Yeah.
You hear these stories all the time. Somebody was an actor for 40 years and all they did with these little free equity waiver plays in a 20-seat theater somewhere, you know, for years. And then suddenly they're cast in a role and now they're a big deal character actor or something.
Yeah.
How does that happen? It's like you might as well go out and stand in a field and hope to get hit by lightning.
Mm-hmm.
But it does tend to be reciprocal in that, yeah, it's a huge business, yeah, it's a competitive business, but if you make a commitment and hang in there and work steadfastly, relentlessly towards a goal, learning your craft, perfecting your craft, meeting people, gaining your trust of people, making friends, networking, It is something that can be accomplished. It can be, but it won't be on your time frame. And it may not even be in the way you thought it was going to be. You came out to Los Angeles to be an actor, but in the course of your 5, 10, 20 years of putting in your work, you might suddenly, you know, find yourself working as an assistant editor at some post house somewhere, because that's the path, that's the door that opened for you, and you met a guy who knew a guy who needed a guy,
right.
And then you wind up helping him, and you find out, hey, you know what, there's a lot of ways to scratch this itch. I don't have to be on camera to feel good. I can be in the editing room manipulating the images of other actors, making them look good based on all that I know about acting.
Right.
And so
that'll be satisfying.
Yeah. But I'm being completely candid when I say in the writing workshops that I was in when I moved out here, I was certainly not the most talented writer in the world. There were a couple of people I remember very well who were amazing writers. Naturally, they just got it. They understood something that I didn't at the time. But I made it and they didn't. Now, why? I mean, I ask myself that question a lot. You might say, well, he's just a lucky guy, and I am. But I also know that I hung in there and worked harder than him, longer than him. At some point, they gave up. At some point, there's one guy who was a paramedic on an ambulance, and he wanted to be a TV writer, and he was fabulous. But he just didn't want to put in the work. If this script wasn't going to sell, then the idea of writing 5 and 10 and 20 more scripts that might not sell was more than he was prepared to invest.
Interesting.
And he went back to being a paramedic, and he's probably a great paramedic. Could he have been a successful writer? I don't know why not, except I wanted it more than him. You know, and it's just that simple.
That is the answer right there. You gotta want it more than the other guy.
Yeah, and then you got, but that means not just that you keep writing script after script after script, which I did, obsessively, but you have to hang in there and take the body blows of disappointment. When someone looks at your script and goes, Scott, I know you've been working on this for 5 years, but it's a real piece of crap. And it may be somebody you respect.
Yep.
You have to be a magician. If somebody says, I saw where you hid the anvil in your shorts, you know, on that trick, you know, and they didn't fool anybody. Well, you at a point, you have to say, well, you could say, well, blah, 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 you know, or, oh, crap, maybe I ought to work on my game a little bit or eliminate that trick from my repertoire because it's not working. At some point, if you're going to do this professionally and play at this level, the level you're playing at, being here at the Magic Castle, or that I played at television, you have to be able to take that and not personally.
That's right.
You just say, okay, that really hurts. Now what am I going to do? And
right.
In my case, I would go home, I'd grumble to my wife or whatever, and I'd go right into my office and start writing.
Yeah.
And I would turn my disappointment and anger into creativity.
Creativity, yeah.
And in your case, you would go back into the garage or whatever and work on a new trick or master the one that maybe wasn't working.
Right.
We all have those in the arts, performing arts, whatever. And not everybody's willing to set their ego aside to develop those scars. At some point, people fall away and they go, you know what, screw this, this is not worth it. And it isn't for them, and that's fine. This isn't for everybody.
Yeah.
You know, it just isn't for everybody. And you know, you look at Philip Seymour Hoffman, you know, arguably the finest actor of our moment.
Yeah.
And something about his success and his talent and his friends and everything, this beloved guy, kids, something about all that wasn't enough.
Yeah.
There was something else, a demon there. That he had repressed for a long time, apparently, and then couldn't anymore. I wouldn't imply that acting or show business had anything to do with that.
Yeah.
He was carrying that with him for a long
before
time.
Before, really, yeah.
But people go into this business thinking, well, if I make it, then I'll be happy. It's like winning the lottery. If I win the lottery, then everything will be great.
Yeah.
And the lottery winds up ruining their life because they can't handle it. So, the trek to show business is imprecise. You don't know how you're going to get in or how it's going to go when you get in, except that you do have to hang in there and just keep knocking at the door until one of them opens. And when the door opens, then you better be ready. When the bell rings, you got to go.
Yeah.
And a lot of people come here and they're not ready. You know, they're not ready for prime time, as they would say. You know, they're well intentioned and they're nice people, but they don't have the training or they don't have the stamina. Because once you get in, then you got to stay in, and it's hard. You know, you and I were talking earlier about doing network TV shows, so that's a great dream. I'm going to be on a TV show. I'm going to make millions of dollars a year. Well, those people work really hard, and the pressure on them, the actors, to succeed, to be perfect, to then parlay that into movies and other things, is unrelenting. It's really hard. And you have to be wired a certain way to tolerate that, let alone be happy in it. And I've known a number of well-known actors who are really miserable people. Very talented, nice people, good friends, a couple of them, but they're just not happy. Because the thing that drives them to be an actor is somehow not connected to the thing that would make most people happy. Or maybe another way of looking at it is maybe some of those people are only happy when they are acting. You know, when they are another character.
As someone else.
And in their own life, it isn't all that cool.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, even a successful actor is not acting every day, all day. You're acting a few moments here, a few weeks there, a month there. And
well, for the most part, an actor is always out of a job.
Yeah.
I mean, they're looking for the next one.
Yeah, I mean, you think about, you know, Meryl Streep or somebody. Well, how many days a year does she work?
Actually work.
You know, a couple of months, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. That's got to be difficult.
And so, it's an interesting business. You can read all the books on it. You know, I would recommend people read a lot of, if they're interested in being an actor in Hollywood, read a lot of biographies and autobiographies of famous actors they admire, and you'll see, warts and all, you know, how this whole thing kind of has worked for those people.
Sure.
And then maybe draw your own conclusions about your own life. I do tell my students, find, and we've all learned this being old guys that we are, your work cannot be the thing that makes you happy. Your career cannot be the happy thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you think it's going to be, then you're really going to be in a world of hurt. Your career pays you money,
but doesn't define you.
Doesn't define you. You have to find along the way the thing that makes you happy.
Mm-hmm.
Family,
right.
Friends,
right.
Hobby,
right.
Your dogs, charity work. I don't care what it is. Painting, hiking.
Your religion.
Religion, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Spiritual pursuits. But cooking, you know, anything.
Mm-hmm.
Anything that satiates that soul, that
spirit.
Thing that aches in people. Your career is your career. It isn't your life. The problem is in show business, it becomes your life because it's an unending pursuit of the, it's a quest.
Yeah.
And the quest becomes all-consuming. But you've got to figure out how to be a whole person despite all of that. And it's really a magic trick. It's
right.
A magic trick. It's a total magic trick.
Mm-hmm.
Only in this instance, it's not an illusion. It's an actual magic trick. You know, it's like, it's because it's hard. It's a balancing act that is not for everybody. And people spend their whole life trying to figure this out, and they don't, you know. Others have the balance, they figure it out, and and they do really well on it. And I have friends that have done really well on it. I've done really well on it. But I made a change, as you and I were talking earlier.
Yes, right,
From producing, I was lucky in that I attained all my dreams. I got a chance to be a director and a producer and a showrunner and a writer and all the things that I wanted to do when you and I were in college. But at a point, that was not enough. Mm-hmm. It became less fun for me as I was advancing in my age in the industry. I've been doing this a long time, and I found that teaching was the thing that was making me happy. And as I told you earlier, my wife's one that pointed that out to me.
And you're teaching where now?
I teach at Cal State Long Beach. Mm-hmm. It's where Steven Spielberg went to school. We have some wonderful film program there. And I'm tenured, and I just wrote a book on directing. And
what's it called? What's the name of the book?
It's called Eye of the Storm, mm-hmm. Directing for Film, Television, and Emerging Media.
Available on Amazon.
Anyway, and on your Kindle?
And yes, you can have it. You can have it digitally. But anyway, that's something I never would have had time to do. Write a book on directing. Who's got time to do that when you're doing a TV show? So I'm now doing that, teaching what I learned, these kind of lessons you and I are talking about, to students, because this is a hard business, and a lot of times it's harder than it ought to be. At times it was, for me, harder than it should have been, I think. Mm-hmm. And so I can maybe help them avoid some of that. If I can make it easier for them by telling them mistakes I made or mistakes friends of mine made, or turn left, don't turn right, watch out for this, be careful of that, then, you know, or at least help them get their first job.
Right.
Just getting a job is challenging.
That's challenging.
I've been able to start a lot of young careers in those entry-level jobs. And, you know, that's really a good feeling.
Yeah. Well, as we start to wrap up, let me say that the title of my podcast is called The Magic Word. You've mentioned a lot of words that are magical, you know, and that are important in life. And that's my question to you is, what is your magic word or phrase, or what is it that is your motto? What do you live by? What's important to you?
Wow. Magic word.
Yeah, or phrase, or, you know.
The scotch count.
I like single malt. You're my man. Okay.
That's it. Bottle of Old Bond, please. Perseverance is a good word.
Everything you've said this whole time, it's all been perseverance.
Yeah.
It's go for the goal. You know, follow that passion of something that you want to do and persevere, because it will lead you through at the end, I guess.
And the word passion. Not everybody has passion, mm-hmm. you know, for stuff, for this, for magic, for baseball, whatever. You have to know what your passion is. You have to cultivate that. And then you have to pursue it. You know, with a really strong focus.
And persevere.
Yeah. And for me, the rest of it is, you know, it changes in different phases of your life, you mm-hmm. know. You've got, you know, as a dad, you know, my daughter's 31 now, and she's a school teacher. So a lot of my whole orientation is just about wishing her well, watching her grow and learn and change. You know what I mean? It's
fun time.
You hand over your own life priorities to mm-hmm. a kid or to you know, siblings or whatever. So it's you know, being happy. Just I went into teaching full time 10 years ago, and I kind of think maybe I should have done it 10 years earlier, because I've never been happier, and all these wonderful things are flowing towards me.
Because mm-hmm. You were trying to do something and working 100 hours a week.
Yeah, it was 100 hours a week, by the way, for anybody listening. Do the math. 100 hours a week. That was my average for about 30 years. Mm-hmm. And after a while, you get tired of working 100 hours
a
week.
After a while.
You know, it's the truth, though. And there was one time I came home from a show, and a friend of mine knocked at the door, and when I opened the door, his jaw literally dropped when he saw me, because I had just come home. And I looked like I'd been run over by a steamroller, I think. But it was 100 hours, and they were hard hours, emotionally, intellectually draining hours on that particular show. But you heal, and you get healthy again and all that. But for me now, it's such a pleasure working with these kids and doing things. You know, I just got back from Hamburg, Germany. I did a week of lectures at a university there. you know, that they invited me and brought me over there to talk to their students and to do workshops was, that's like right off the bucket list, you know, cross that one off the list. You know, what a great opportunity. I had a chance to, I wrote and directed a documentary, a feature documentary about a music artist who's a friend of mine. That was a 3-year project. Who's got 3 years to put into a no-pay little documentary? Yeah. I never could have done that before.
Yeah.
No, but I wanted to do it. I could do it. And I had a chance to do it because I was teaching. My lifestyle now is so different that I could accommodate this little project purely for the love of doing it and for my affection for the artist. Her name is Kelly Coffey. She's a country music artist. Best the ACM Best in Female Artist of the Year and all of that. And I got to direct a couple of music videos for her. That was a bucket list item. I'd always been interested in music videos. I thought, wouldn't it be great to direct one of those? And Kelly called and said, hey, would you direct my next 2 videos? That was interesting. And so all of this flows for me out of just being present and content in what I'm doing. And then these opportunities. I directed a comedy pilot early last year, for a friend of mine, a former student, wrote a pilot, and he wanted to know if I would direct it for him. So I had a chance to work with all these amazing actors during my winter vacation. It was total fun. Again, I'm not in the business of trying to be the next hot director, you know. Mm-hmm. This is purely a joy to work with a former student.
Sure, sure.
And some very accomplished actors to see if I can help him get his show made. I don't have any expectations of it.
Anything beyond that?
The old days, if you would do this, then hope that it goes so you can be the director.
Stepping stone to something else.
There's no stepping stone. It's just, in fact, I argued with him at first, told him he should direct it. I said, I'll come and sit next to you and I'll guide you.
Yeah.
And he said, no, I'm not ready. I want you to direct it. You understand what this is. And it was just a blast.
Yeah.
And that relationship has come full circle, that the student now becomes the colleague and actually technically my boss.
Yeah.
It was wonderful.
That's cool.
And it's a pretty good pilot. It's won some film festivals.
Mm-hmm.
And
What's the show?
It's called WHOA, W-H-O-A, which is the Westerlies Homeowners Association. And it's a farcical look at the politics and the lifestyles of people in this condo complex. And there's some, it's like Alice in Wonderland, where an innocent makes a mistake of buying in this building. Everybody in the building is crazy. Trying to exploit him for one reason or another,
and
it's a very funny, very kind of perverse show, which appeals to my sense of humor. But these are the things that I had a conversation with a friend the other day. He said, "My God, all this cool stuff's happening for you," and I said, "Yeah, it's amazing because I'm not actually looking for
things. Things come to you.
And
when you let go,
and I'm quite happy." Just teaching. In fact, I'm trying to cut back, which is laughable because it sounds like I'm doing a lot, and I am.
Yeah.
But, and I just directed a play, a one-man show about Albert Einstein that a guy wrote, and I, gave him some notes on his script as a favor, and he suddenly was accepted in the Canadian Fringe Theater Festival, which is a 6-city tour, and he suddenly had to get the show put together to go take it to Canada. Said, would you direct it? You know the show as well as I do, and I need some help. So I said, well, I shouldn't be doing this, but and it's fun.
Yeah.
And again, it's what makes you happy. And even though I'm working a lot, it's all happy work.
Yeah. You can pick and choose. You're at a position now where you can actually choose the things that do make you happy.
Things like this come your way because it's, however you want to look at it.
Serendipity.
Whatever, you and I were talking about, your own path and the magic of it. It's like sometimes when you just make yourself open or available to something, if it's supposed to be, it'll flow your direction, as it has for you and it has for me.
Yeah.
I'm not going to question it.
I'm not questioning it.
Just let it go. Well, listen, I appreciate the time we've had to talk, and I hope that the listeners will, I'm sure they will get a lot out of this. It's if they have some information and they want to contact you.
You could find me on the website at California State University in Long Beach.
Okay.
And it's Tom Blomquist, and I'm
on B-L-O-M-Q-U-I-S-T.
Yeah, so on the faculty list,
yep.
There's an email there. Somebody could email me. And
yep. They have and buy the book also.
And you
buy my book.
but if they have a follow-up question to this, yeah. They'll certainly send me an email and I can get back to them.
Who knows? Interesting. Thanks very much, Tom. That's Tom Blomquist for the Magic Word Podcast. This is Scotty out.
For more content, including pictures of my guest from this podcast, commentary, links, show notes, and more, be sure to visit the webpage at themagicwordpodcast.com. And you can help spread the word by liking the Magic Word Podcast on Facebook and sharing with your friends. Thanks for your support, and thanks for listening. Till next time, Scotty out.